Welcome to the Web3 Artist Spotlight, the podcast that shines a spotlight on talented artists who are leveraging Web3 technology to sell their art and connect with collectors in new and innovative ways. Through in-depth interviews, we learn more about the artists behind the art and uncover their unique creative processes, inspirations, passions, and the stories behind their captivating artworks. From seasoned professionals to emerging talents, we bring you a diverse range of voices from the Web3 community, and we delve deeper into how blockchain technology, NFTs, and decentralized platforms are revolutionizing the art industry.
Ishida, aka Soul Curry, is a visionary abstract artist. Her cubist-inspired art is full of depth and beauty and is a reflection of Ishida's emotions and experiences. In the Web3 space, Ishida is a well-known fine artist. Outside of the space, she is also a successful artist with art available for purchase through Etsy and on her own website. Soul Curry's art is also on the walls of a fine dining restaurant in Canada. Her contributions and presence in the space will undoubtedly leave a lasting impact and already has inspired many, including myself and Giancarlo. And with that, Giancarlo and I welcome Ishida to the space.
Wow, thank you so much. This is, it's wonderful to be here. It's been a while since I've been on Twitter Spaces, but, I really feel like we've kind of not had a lot of quality spaces. And one of the things that I definitely see you and Giancarlo doing is showing up, consistently. And I know how much work this takes to do this on a weekly basis, not just here on the, the Web3 Artist Spotlight, but what you're doing with the Collector's Corner, all the education that you've been bringing on, the back end stuff that you're doing, building, your own brands and, bringing the community to the forefront. So I just wanted to say that I really see you guys working so hard, and just to, be part of your circles is an honor. And thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much, Soul Curry. That means so much coming from you. Truly appreciate it. And it's our honor.
Yeah, definitely greatly appreciate it. And it is a lot of work. I will say that, but we do definitely love the stuff we're doing in the space, and a big part of this was really to have a very quality space, where we really, really got to like dive deep, right, and get to know people much better, right, and consistency, right, just trying to keep it going, right. So 67 episodes in, which is it's quite amazing just to look back and be like, wow, we've really interviewed that many people and spotlighted that many artists. But it's a pleasure having you here. I've been really looking forward to this space, and let's dive right in. So I think the first thing I just want to see is that maybe you could take a few minutes, Ishida, and tell us a little bit more about yourself, your story and journey, and maybe then concluding that with like how you eventually got into the Web3 space.
Absolutely. I don't know how far back you want me to go, but I think I've always been an artist. I was born to be an artist, and I can't imagine myself doing anything except doing art. So, life has a strange way of bringing you exactly where you were meant to be and at this point that you're meant to be. So I've been an artist for as long as I can remember. I grew up in India. My roots come from South Asia. I live in Canada, so I've been all around the world. I have a bit of influences from everywhere. I'm a trained artist, so I went down the art school route against the grain. I went. My parents are medical doctors. So coming from an Asian family, coming from a time where art was definitely not part of the conversation, coming from a background of doctors and scientists, to really own my artistic calling was a big struggle. But I really felt like this is what I was meant to do. And I followed my convictions, became an artist, studied art at the undergrad level. I did my BFA. Then I went on to do my MFA in fine arts. And I specialized in something called design communication while I was doing my MFA. And, when we were working on it, I also learned about, looking at design from a global perspective, studied art history, studied a lot of things that, you know, I pretty much touched on every aspect of art that you can think of, from sculpture to photography to painting to printmaking. I did it all. And I think that helped me broaden my, you know, the perspectives that I see in what I wanted to do. And my journey's been pretty crazy. I've been, I've been all around the world, lived in Asia, lived in North America, traveled all over the world, had a lot of different influences come and go, trying to find my style. And for the last almost 30 years, I mean, it's been 32 years that I call myself an artist now. So almost more than three decades, calling myself an artist has been a privilege. And I do that. I've been a traditional artist in the traditional sense, but I've also been working with software, with you know, technology right from the early stages of my career. I had a day job in broadcast design, so I was used to working for television networks, for news networks, for special events like Olympics. So, you know, design and software was not something that was alien to me. And I've always, you know, over the years, I've always tried to find a way of bridging my day job, digital art, with my traditional art practice. And, you know, over the course of the last, I think almost 10 years that I've tried to find that bridge, and Web3 happened at a time where I was ready. I was ready to embrace it. I was ready to learn. I was ready to take things to the next level, and really, really enjoyed the different aspects that it presents to me. So that's a little bit about me. A general overview of who I am. I identify as a, you know, cubist artist, but I also have influences of mid-century modern, of Bauhaus, of, Asian influences in my work. So I like to think of myself as a more of a global artist, more than just one kind of artist. And I'm a mother, wife, daughter, wear many hats, wear many faces, and, navigate this world of, calling myself an artist every single day.
Wow, love that. And I love also how you, because your style encompasses so many different elements of, calling yourself a global artist, right? Instead of just, limiting it to cubist or, mid-century modern, whatever, right? So that's awesome. And I didn't know that you had also done like broadcast network and things like that. So really interesting that you've actually had a lot of experience already with technology and software and incorporating that, marrying that together with your art before. So really fascinating to learn that about you as well.
Yeah, my day job for over 20 years was in broadcast design, broadcast television. I've worked for some of the biggest news networks that you can think of, any television channel that you probably switched on your television at some point. There is something designed by me, over the last 20 years, especially if you've seen news, or if you've seen, the election coverage, or if you've seen the Olympics. There's something that I've done at some point in my life that you've probably seen. So 25 years of, being chief creative designer for one of the largest news networks in the world. And it was amazing. And I've been working on, I learned Photoshop before even Photoshop was on Windows. So it was wow, pretty cool to navigate those times and learn, and kind of adapt and move and flow with technology. So
yeah,
it never scared me. It was something that I really enjoyed doing, and, tapping into the design aspect of my work versus the fine art aspect of my work was very interesting.
Very cool. Very cool. And so maybe fast forwarding a little bit then, how did you discover crypto, Web3, and eventually make your way into this space?
I think that I would credit that to my husband, who has been, he has been a Bitcoin maxi, has been in the crypto space for a while. But I never really understood it myself. And he was kind of nudging me in the right direction for a while. But because I was working two jobs, I had a day job and I was working on my own art practice after hours. So I really didn't have the time. But it was during the pandemic, it was in 2020 that, my own art practice became my primary focus. And, it was kind of, it had taken over my day job. And I had finally come to the point of quitting my day job and becoming a full-time artist. And that's when I really started to see about how did I see myself going forward in the next 5 years, in the next 10 years. And that's when my husband was like, why don't you just try understanding a little bit about crypto? And everybody's talking about crypto. And this was just before the big crypto boom happened. And obviously, you know, you don't want to be mansplained. Even if it's your husband, I didn't want to be mansplained. I wanted to be ready for when I was ready. And I was wanted to learn it myself, rather than being, you know, nudged gently in that direction. So I took my time. I started understanding, you know, this was the time of Clubhouse. And, you know, we started learning on Clubhouse together. First thing I did was I ended up in Farooq's room. And he was talking about something called NFTs. And it was a room with 2,000 people. And I spent the next 3 hours just fascinated by what I was hearing. And this was February 2021. I was in a room, and the very first room that I ended up in was Farooq's room on Clubhouse. And, you know, just that I was absolutely fascinated and I was hooked. And then I started learning, and then, you know, NFTs and crypto happened, and I never looked back.
That is awesome. And then when did you decide, like, all right, I'm going to now like mint my first artwork. I'm going to jump in and do this. Like, was it like shortly after that Farooq room and learning about it, or did it still take you some time before you like kind of jumped in and started minting?
I mean, I've always believed that the best way to learn is by doing. So, you know, I did learn. So, you know, I told myself that I'm here to get my feet wet, and what's the worst that can happen? It'll be a learning experience, right? So, but I was fascinated by what I was hearing, because, you know, for the longest time, both in my day job and in the art that I was doing myself, it was such an isolated practice. It was a very competitive, isolating practice also, because, you know, all of us were vying for these very few spots. There were residencies we were always applying for and getting rejected on, or, you know, it was a hard life to navigate on your own. Whereas here, I saw the floodgates open with support, with artists speaking my language, everybody having, you know, similar experiences. I never felt so included before. And I felt like if I was feeling like that, I'm sure there was, you know, this was where I belonged. And I definitely wanted to be a part of it by doing, not just by sitting back and listening, by being an active participant. Because I wasn't seeing too many people from South Asia, you know, at that point. I did not see too many women from South Asia, for sure. Brown women, people who spoke like me or, you know, had my kind of experiences. So I definitely wanted to try things out myself. And I jumped in, you know, March. It was March 2021, exactly 3 years ago, that I minted my first artwork. And it was pretty tremendous.
No, I love that. And I love that. Yeah. And I can relate to that too. Like, I'm the kind of person that just learns better by doing and just like jumping in versus, you know, just listening or reading up on stuff. So definitely can relate to that. There was one quick thing I did want to maybe circle back on as well. So you kind of hinted at it when you were mentioning a bit about your story, right? And so you did grow up in, you know, so in India with a family of doctors. And I was kind of curious, like, how growing up in that environment maybe influenced or affected your decision to pursue art. And did you face, you know, maybe a lot of challenges and actually being able to follow your passion and get like their buy-in and support to do a creative, creative career?
I went against the grain. I got a lot of resistance. I mean, at that time, I'm a child of the 70s. So, you know, growing up in the 80s and the 90s, especially when I was in college in the 90s, art was not a part of the conversation. Art was not something that you took seriously as a career. It was not even an option that I had ever heard of, you know. So if for me to just, you know, go against the grain was a huge shock for my parents, and I got a lot of resistance. But at the same time, I felt like I belonged when I went to art school, when I got accepted there. And let me tell you, India is a very, very populous country. So, you know, we were like, there were tens of thousands of people applying for 50 seats. So, you know, wow. Just to get through that exam and to get accepted was something that, you know, came as a shock to me, like, oh my God, I got accepted. And I was on the path to study medicine, like my dad, you know. I was studying science in high school, biology. I sat for my medical entrance exams. But I always knew that this was not who I was. And it happened very serendipitously for me. I was just, it just happened. And I felt like it was calling out to me, and I just went for it. I did not get too much support in the beginning. I supported myself. I got scholarships all the way through art college. And like all of us know, art materials are very expensive. But I was academically strong, so I was able to get scholarships. I was able to get stipends. And that's how I managed to support myself. And eventually my parents came around. They my dad became my biggest supporter. He would always show up at my exhibitions, and he's very proud of me now. But it was hard in the beginning. And because it was hard in the beginning, I completely understand, you know, what it means to go against the grain, you know, what it means to really stand up for your convictions when everybody's telling you that it's not going to work. So, you know, I've been there, I've done that, I've struggled through it, I've had the failures, and I've managed to push through that, even, you know, with all that, coming to you. You know, there's so many things that happened on the way, but at the same time, I knew that I was exactly where I wanted to be.
And I love that so much. And that, you know, and I think that, yeah, it's those experiences, right? I think that definitely help us make us more resilient, right? And I'm sure that those things have helped you a lot probably in your life. And, you know, not even in this space, right, where we have a lot of naysayers and things like that. But I love that, you discovered that passion, that this was kind of your calling, and although difficult and, you know, a lot of pushback. And I can get that because, you know, I come up from a family of immigrants as well. And, you know, very much like, you know, the career you got to pursue is engineering or law or something like that. So can definitely understand that part of it. But I love that that your parents, you know, eventually came around, and that, you know, now your dad became like your biggest supporter. So that's so beautiful. And I love that. So I'm so glad that, that those things worked out for you.
Yeah. And I wanted to circle back on something that you had mentioned, which is that you said that you were born to be an artist. And my question, and one that I often think about, is in your opinion, Ishita, do you think art is a human luxury or a human necessity?
Wow. That is a philosophical, that is an emotional question that has so many nuances. I think it is an intrinsic part of us. Art is an intrinsic part of every single human being. And you can teach somebody a skill, but you can't teach somebody art. You know, if you know what I mean, art is a feeling, a generalized emotion. You can sharpen it, you can polish it, but it needs nurturing. And for that, I feel like it is a basic human necessity. It is also something that, you know, we all are born with. And it really depends on how much we allow it to shine, how much we allow it to be polished and molded, and, you know, how much we allow it to flourish. That eventually determines how creative we are going to be, you know, for the rest of our life. It doesn't mean that you have to be an artist if you're, you know, you have to follow a path of art, but there is art and there's creativity in every single one of us. And unfortunately, as a society, as needs and wants and conditioning and, you know, a lot of things that happen throughout your life, that creative function, that creative instinct in us is always kind of suppressed. And it takes conviction to say that, you know, I am going to choose the path of creativity. I am going to acknowledge it in whatever form that is, whether it's writing, you know, cooking, whether it's jewelry making, whether it's an artistic pursuit, whether it's singing, music, anything. Having that creative outlet really helps the other aspects of your life flourish. So I feel like art is such a basic necessity and not just a luxury.
Oh, I love that. And I would definitely, definitely agree with you. And I, as I looked at your artworks, you have both abstract and cubist elements. And at the top of the space, you shared the other influences. I was curious if you could share with us how you developed your very distinctive and instantly recognizable artistic style?
Yeah, so because I was a trained artist, as I went through, my 6 to 8 year, journey in art school, and I came completely raw. So you have to see, I was a complete, condition to study science. And then I decided, no, I'm not going to do that. And I'm going to pursue fine arts. So it was a complete 180 degrees from what I knew. So I was completely raw. But and when I went into art school, I told myself that I know nothing and I'm going to be a sponge. I'm just going to absorb and I'm going to learn. And because I went with that attitude of I don't know anything, I'm just going to learn and I'm just going to listen. And I started paying attention to little things like art history. I started understanding where methods and materials mattered, how tools were made, how pigments were made. So I was very fascinated with that because that was an aspect that, it was not part of the conversation earlier. And, I started looking at printmaking, photography. So I tried everything at the start of my career, everything. I would be in a dark room developing old-fashioned photographs, would be doing lithography, printmaking, silk screen. I've done, all those kinds of things. And it helps you, figure out exactly what appeals to you. And for me, I was always drawn to something very bold, darker outlines. I liked stuff that made me think, that I did not want something very representational in front of me or very realistic. I love looking at things and finding my own interpretations in it. And my final year MFA dissertation was on the Cubist movement. And I spent more than 2.5 years just trying to really understand how Cubism was still relevant, and how Cubism really started, what were the different influences. And because I was in Asia, where did the influences kind of merge with Asian art? Looked at different art movements. And, it was such an intensive immersion into Cubism that I felt myself going back to it again and again. And I started seeing parallels between Western Cubism and what was happening in India in the 1920s with the Bengal School of Art that had also come up around the same time. There were heavy Cubist influences from there. That was the art that I grew up with as well. So, seeing the global influences and that art doesn't necessarily need to be geographically bound, was such an important aspect of what I was studying. And, slowly over time, I started experimenting with watercolors, with sculpture, with everything, with abstraction. And then over time, I wanted to do something that was not completely abstract, but at the same time, not completely representational. And kind of, my style evolved over time, because I found myself coming back to it again and again over my careers. And Cubism, I called myself a madman modernist. So, madman modern, this was a term a friend gave me. She called me, "You're very madman modern." So I'm like, what does that mean to you? And she's like, "It has your work has this element of the 70s. Your work has the element of mid-century modern. And you also have that, that era of the Mad Men where, people are just coming up with bold colors and Cubism." And I'm like, damn, she hit the nail on the head. And I love that aspect of it, that you can become different. You can have these different influences and kind of come up with your own distinct style. And yeah, that's how my style was born.
That's so cool. I do really love the style and like all the different elements that you incorporate in it. And to Jenny, like what she mentioned before, it is very like distinct. Like I could look at a piece, and even though your pieces have, there's variation and stuff like that, but I could still definitely like recognize like, all right, this is a Sol Curry artwork, So I love that. What I wanted to learn a little bit more about next was actually, if you can maybe walk us through like your artistic process, like from like the initial inspiration you get to like the finished piece, like how do you approach, each stage, and are there any rituals or techniques or things that you like to do that you find particularly helpful when you're creating a piece?
For me, I love experimenting with different media. So I don't like being just bound by, doing stuff digitally or doing stuff in the traditional way. I love making it my own. So I can take little bits from here and there, and I kind of, you know, it's like cooking. You take different ingredients and you figure out the best way to make it, you know, yours. And that's why, you know, when I first come up with something that I want to do, I always think of, you know, what exactly am I trying to communicate first? So I always think of, you know, the emotion that I want to communicate. What is my artwork going to say? How big do I want it to be? And I do think of that first before I actually approach the art. So, you know, I write down a lot of things. I'm a writer, so I do a lot of, you know, I just write down my thoughts. I have a sketchbook practice, so I kind of sketch a lot. It's a lot of the sketches are also stream of consciousness. If I'm not thinking, what would I be doing? How does my hand move? How do different materials and, you know, surfaces react with each other? How do they absorb things? So those are some of the things that are always at the back of my mind, and I'm always playing with this. So the play aspect of it is also very essential in how the final process unfolds. So my process is I always think of what I want to do. Tap into it, make sketches first. Sketches could be anywhere on a piece of paper, could be on my iPad, and I will sketch and I will try and do it over and over again till I get what I'm trying to communicate. And then I definitely work on the color before I actually, you know, start working on it. I think of a color scheme if I want to do it in color. I think about doing stuff in black and white. How much texture do I want? Where do I want the play to happen? And then I just, you know, let it go. I just start a particular piece, depending on the medium. And then I just let it take on a life of its own, because sometimes you need the art to be directing the artist and not just the artist creating the art. So I think it's a process between, you know, the two of us. It's the painting takes on a life of its own as I'm giving birth to the painting, if you know what I mean. So it is a play, it is a push and pull, it is a discovery process. And it is also, I learn so much about myself through the whole process, so that every artwork becomes an extension of myself. So, you know, it is, and, you know, just putting paint, sometimes I will go back and forth between mediums. I could do something digitally. I would print it out, I would paint over it, or I would paint something physically, scan it, finish it digitally, and so on. So it's like a, you know, a back and forth process that I really, really enjoy.
Wow, I love that. I love that notion of the push and pull, and like how you know you first start with the feeling, the idea, what you want to convey, but that then the art takes a life of its own, and it starts almost directing you, and then you flow. I mean, that's, you know, just love that process, and that, you know, it's you know, it kind of then takes that path, right? And you just let it flow. So no, thank you so much for sharing more about your process with us. Next thing I wanted to ask you was, I have seen, you know, several posts where you mentioned about, you know, kind of enjoying and embracing challenges. There was even one funny post that I'll put up there that you even referenced the Ted Lasso quote about riding the horse. And, you know, if it's too comfortable, you know, you're not really, you know, challenging yourself, right? Or something to that effect. But what I was curious about is, like, what do you think has been like the most challenging project that you've undertaken, and how did you like kind of overcome some of the obstacles or difficulties with that particular one?
Oh my God, there are so many. Life is a challenge, right? Navigating through different aspects of the iterations of who you are is challenging. So life is challenging. Life's thrown a lot of challenges at me, but one of the biggest challenges has not been a project as such, but it has been overcoming the darkest period of my life. I'm a cancer survivor. I'm a cancer warrior. 7 years ago, I was diagnosed with, you know, cancer at the time where I had just started my full-time business. I had just launched my career. And, you know, just when you think you have a path in front of you, and then suddenly everything shuts down. And just navigating through that dark time taught me a lot about myself, because I completely shut down. And the only thing that got me out of that time was just putting one line, one paintbrush stroke, one figure at a time. I was able to just get out of that through through this practice of, you know, just do it, just focus on the art, and that's how I got through it. So challenges, you know, I feel like I need to challenge myself. I need to grow as an artist, because if I am not challenging, if I am not growing, then what am I doing here? If I don't want to be the same version of myself that I was, say, 10 years ago. I want to be the woman that I am today. The experiences that I've gone through has made me the woman that I am, the artist that I am today. So I want to take a little bit of everything, the journey of the art, the journey of the medium, the journey of discovery, the journey of play, and kind of make it into this, into something beautiful that didn't exist before. So, you know, I just marvel at the fact that, you know, artists are able to create something out of nothing. There was nothing before, and then we were able to conjure up something that, you know, just from the stream of our imagination, from, you know, the traces of our existence, from our experiences, we were able to create something out of nothing. And that's a superpower. So I feel like, you know, getting over these challenges, and we possess these powers to overcome whatever is there, but also it's such a beautiful practice where you're able to tune and where you're able to focus and create on a regular basis. So yeah, that's, I don't think there's been one particular challenge as such, but every project starts off as, you know, you think of any big project as a challenge, but when you break it down into smaller parts, that's when it becomes more manageable and easy to do. So, and I learned that, you know, through my cancer journey, is that, you know, you don't look at the larger picture. You just figure out what to do right now at this very moment. And you take one step at a time, and open. Then you look back, you've come a long way. So I've approached, you know, my art exactly the same way. No matter what happens, I always break it down one step at a time.
Man, that is just such great advice, such incredible wisdom. I think you can apply that to literally everything, you know, like you said, with art and with life. And I did have a question about big, about, you know, like a large undertaking. What is the largest piece you have ever made?
The largest piece that I have ever made would be something that I've done recently in Rome and Copenhagen. There were these gigantic wall murals, and like I knew I was going to do that. I knew this was the scale that I was going to work with. So, you know, trying to work with you know, understanding the space that something is going to inhabit is also very important in how you visualize the final piece. I definitely asked for a lot of photographs of that space. I asked for a lot of, you know, a lot of things allied with it. What is the lighting going to be? What does the floor look like? What is the wall texture like? Where, you know, where is it going to be housed? Is it an old building? Is it a new building? What is around it? What is it? What do you want people to experience when they walk in? So all that, you know, really takes, I was taking that into account. Some of my largest pieces, I'm still working on one of my largest pieces. And, you know, yeah, those are some of the, you know, some of the things that I've really enjoy doing, because when you start your career, you never ever dream that one day you're going to have a room dedicated to your art, or you're going to have a giant mural dedicated to your art. So it was fascinating to learn so many different things along the way when you're doing projects like this.
Yeah, and I just posted up to the top. I think that is the one. Is that the one?
Yes, that is one of them. Yes. Since then, I've done three more. So, yeah, that's been amazing. Yeah, that was one of the biggest ones. It was a huge revelation.
Wow. Just so moved by this. I was curious, like, as you're doing these, what is like a challenge that you've encountered doing these large murals?
Challenge is to... I think just to visualize the scale of it. Like, you want people to be able to see it, but then you also want the main areas to be at the eye level. You know, especially when something is housed inside a building where you're not going to be seeing it from a distance, just trying to figure out where you want to place the main elements, because you want people to be able to see it comfortably without having to crank their necks up, or, you know, be uncomfortable seeing it. And another thing that I also noticed is a lot of people love taking photographs of art. So, you know, understanding how social media and how sharing on social media works when you are creating these larger art pieces for immersive spaces was also something that I had to, you know, understand. And it was a challenging experience figuring that out, because you want it to be, you want it to make sense, but you also don't want to compromise on the artwork. You also want people to experience their own stories in it. So it was a challenge learning how to do this.
Yeah, amazing. I never actually even thought that far, that like a work of art, you need to think of that side of it, like it being photographed and then it being shared and all of these different components, like it can't overwhelm the remainder of the space as well, because you want that to almost be like a play, like with negative space in a way with the actual area where this is going to live. But then that other point you made about how will it photograph and will it be appreciated sort of like on a more vast scale, but staying true to your artistic style and your vision. That's just lovely. Thank you so much for sharing that, Ishita.
Yeah, I mean, those are the things that, you know, when you're working on a smaller piece of canvas or you're working on a piece that is going to just be displayed on a screen, I really never really thought of that. And then I had a huge respect for muralists. And I was thinking, my goodness, you know, just imagine the scale that muralists work with. And, you know, you have to imagine sides of a building. You have to imagine people viewing it from greater distances versus, you know, inside a smaller room or a gigantic panel. So it was very interesting to think of the design aspect of the art while you're thinking of the art itself.
So one of the things I wanted to go to next was start to maybe talk a little bit about some of your collections and your art. And there is a collection you have on OpenSea called Reverberance or Color Reverberance. And I was curious if maybe you could elaborate a little bit on how that collection explored the relationship between like color and emotion and how you translated that into like your unique style. And I'll maybe pin up one of the pieces I saw from this one that I thought was really cool.
That was one of my most fun, you know, collections that I did, because I always like working in collections, because I feel like, okay, you've worked with standalone pieces and I've done that a lot in the past. But when you kind of pull a collection together, it kind of makes sense in a larger scheme of things, not just as one art, but how do you pull it all together so that it makes sense cohesively. So I really enjoy working with collections, and some collections are smaller, some collections are larger. But this collection especially started happening, I think it was end of 2022, that I was just working with different colors. And I was challenging myself to think of colors that I don't normally gravitate towards. I don't normally gravitate towards pinks. I don't really gravitate towards purples. But I challenge myself every now and then to, you know, really break out of what is comfortable and try something new. And as I was working on this, you know, trying to express through color, I also started understanding about, you know, how do I bring these overlaps? How do I bring the overlaps of emotion with color? And so this particular collection became a lot about how do pieces overlap? How do shapes overlap? How do we inhabit between the positive and the negative spaces? How do people and the structure of where you are, how does that relate with each other, and play with the color at the same time. So I started enjoying working on this so much. And I had a conversation with a friend of mine in this space, and I showed it to him, and he was like, oh my God, and you should, you know, I was thinking of dropping just maybe four or five of these and as an addition, but he kind of convinced me that why don't you try a one of one. And, you know, do a collection of, say, 30 and just drop it once every day for 30 days. And I just loved the idea, because I had never done a one-of-one, you know, in that kind of a range before. And I love the idea of doing that, because till then I had only done editions or, you know, very higher priced one-of-ones. I thought of this as a collection that I wanted to reverberate. So that hence the name Reverberation. I wanted it to have some kind of a vibration. I wanted it to have some kind of an energy. And every day I would drop a new piece. And I was very, very fortunate that it sold out. And every day, you know, I was able to communicate what I wanted. And this collection was so much fun to do. And this was one of the biggest highlights of my 2023.
No, I love that. Yeah, I mean, the pieces are just so beautiful, and the play with the colors and the overlap. And I think that was, you know, a great choice of, you know, doing them as like, you know, a daily one of one, you know, piece too. So that was, just a great choice for that particular collection. And then there was one other one that, as I was going through your different, you know, collections and pieces, there's one other one that kind of really spoke to me and stood out because of how maybe different it was from some of your other collections. This one you have on Unknown Origin called Beast. And, you know, it kind of delves into this like inner struggle of you know, kind of containing and confronting maybe darker aspects of ourselves. I'd love to know more a little bit about the inspiration behind that collection and what inspired you to make it.
Oh my God, Beast was one of my favorite collections that I had done, you know, and that I had done at the peak of when, you know, things were really moving. I was able to sell out right away. And I wanted to take a risk with what I was doing and showcase a different side of myself. Because till then, I was only, you know, people had only seen the cubist side, the very colorful side, the, you know, the positive side of me. But I also liked, you know, I also have a darker side, like all of us do. We all have a darker side. We have a side that, you know, doesn't see the light every now and then, but is a very powerful side at the same time. So the Beast collection, I mean, I really wanted to showcase something that was, again, you know, I was very passionate about, that I, you know, I have this gamut of skills that I can do. And it was about showcasing the darker side. And everybody, you know, warned me, don't do it, don't do this, you know, don't drop this. You're doing so well. I was featured on the front page of OpenSea just the week before I launched this. And I was like, I still want to take a risk. I want to have pieces minted that showcase my own journey as an artist. I don't want to be known as just one kind of an artist. And it was a risky move, but I was very happy that it paid off. And this collection was very, very special to me. I haven't done a collection like this since. I'd love to do that. I have so many ideas in my mind that sometimes, you know, putting them together as a coherent collection really makes me very excited.
Yeah, and I'm glad you took that risk, you know, and that's the thing that I find a lot of people maybe struggle with sometimes in the space, right? Is that like, people get kind of afraid that, oh, well, if I create something in a very different style, that's not like similar to what I've done before, that somehow it's going to, you know, affect their brand and their, you know, how they do well with collectors and things like that. But you know, I love being able to see people's, you know, range. And I think there's so many artists like yourself that have, you know, they're so talented, have so much, such a range of different, you know, ability. And it's really cool to see actually like different sides of somebody's artistic expression. Right. And so like, you know, I love like some of your regular cubist pieces, but I saw this collection. I was like, wow, this is cool. You know, like, I don't know, it just really drew me in. And just the fact of like actually how different it was, I was like, wow, this is exciting to see that. So commend you. And I think it was really cool that you kind of took that risk and did something a bit different, you know, and be excited maybe see if you do something like, you know, something different like that in the future as well. So
I'm totally with you. I think every artist needs to take a risk. I think every artist needs to showcase something, you know, a different aspect of themselves that is totally unexpected, surprising, because sometimes you end up surprising yourself. And when you end up surprising yourself, that's the biggest thrill as an artist.
Yeah. And I mean, it's fun too, you know, it's just fun to be able to like experiment and put other work out there. And like the way I see it too is maybe you attract a completely different, you know, collector base as well, right? Like, you know, maybe there's certain things that resonate with certain people, but you put something else out there and there could be other collectors that may resonate with that as well, or even some of your existing ones and just see a different side of you. So no, I love that. And I think it is great advice, you know, to continue to experiment and try new styles, try new things. You know, I think that from my perspective, I feel like it could be a net positive for artists.
And, you know, one thing I challenge myself, and I teach this to my daughter also. My daughter is, she's going to be 17 this year. I can't believe she's going to be 17. But since the time she was 10 years old, she and I, every summer, we would challenge ourselves to learn something new that we hadn't done before. Like one summer, we taught ourselves script writing. One summer, we taught ourselves how to make polymer clay jewelry. And of course, like, she'll pay attention for a week or two, and then I end up with a whole whole gamut of jewelry pieces.
I know that all too well. Get excited about something, and then it's like, okay, I'm on to the next thing.
And then you end up spending so much money on just supplies and stuff. But it's so much fun to learn. Just the fact that, you know, I keep telling her that, just imagine, just before the summer, we knew nothing about this. At the end of the summer, we've learned something that we didn't know before. We've tapped into a different side of our creativity. We can apply this in so many different ways. We don't have to make it a career, but it is something that we've been able to tap into, which makes us a more well-rounded, multidisciplinary person. So, you know, I feel like it's a challenge, but it's something that I really, really enjoy doing, something that I'd completely unexpected, but of course, allied with your passion, of course. I mean, I will not be learning to repair cars, for example, but something like script writing or jewelry making or photography or something else would be so much fun to do.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, I think that's such a cool thing. And I find myself sometimes, yeah, like, even learning like new things with my kids, you know, and experimenting and doing stuff like that. And I mean, I think it kind of helps, you know, keeps us young. And to your point, like, there's sometimes like we may learn a certain skill and you may not even realize like how it could help you in other facets of your life at that moment. But later on, you may be like, oh, well, actually, I learned how to do this, and now I can apply this with my artwork or how I market things for myself, you know. So you never know. Sometimes those other, you know, skills or things we pick up can help us out in ways that, you know, we maybe didn't anticipate when we learned them. So no, I love that you do that with your daughter. And other thing I want to ask you about is, so I know you have your OG collection on OpenSea. It's got about 116 unique items and a very impressive, you know, 341 ETH in sales, which is, you know, definitely, you know, commendable. Is there any particular piece of artwork from that OG collection that maybe holds a special significance or value to you? And maybe can you tell us which one and why?
I think the very first one, it's called Shiva. That was my very first foray into NFTs, and that will always be very special to me. And, you know, the person who bought it, the collector who bought it then became a friend, you know, and then he ended up buying every Genesis piece on every platform that I put out. And that was so interesting for me that, you know, he was always, and you know, as we got talking and as we ended up becoming friends, through social media, he comes from a long line of collectors from the Renaissance time. His family comes from, you know, patrons of the Renaissance age. He grew up in France. And he actually told me, I mean, he would tell me that the reason he resonated with this, or, you know, a particular way that he really sees that in his collection. And he was always buying it to hold it. He never bought it to flip it. And I really felt true patronage from him. And he was able to, he always, every single platform, whether it was Maker's Place or somewhere else that I dropped, he would always buy the first piece that I put out there. So it just validated what I was doing. Even this Beast collection, which was completely different from what he was used to. He bought a piece from the Beast collection because he was excited about what I was doing and the fact that I was challenging myself and taking a risk, and he appreciated that. You know, it just gave me that impetus to keep going. That piece was really something very important to me. He's taking a backseat right now, of course, with the market being what it is, but I really have this wonderful friendship with him. I'm able to ask him a question if I need to. He also helped me navigate, you know, as when I was first in this space, making mistakes, learning to mint, wasting gas fees. Like, that time, gas used to be like $200. You know, at that time.
I remember those times. Yeah.
Those times, right? Like $150. I was doing something on Foundation, and I burnt some. I did some mistake, and I had to burn it. And it was crazy. And I was like, spent $250 on gas itself, and I was like, what the hell am I doing? But yeah, I just learned so much, and these relationships that have formed as a result are very, very valuable.
Yeah, that's one thing I really love about this space, right? And what it's done is because it's a lot about this, the relationships, right? I think, like, in a way that I don't think is, and I mean, I know Jenny and you know a lot more about in art history than I do, right? But I feel like the relationship between collector and artist, right? I think what's happened in this space has been like absolutely revolutionary, right? Like I just think it's such a cool thing that now like people really have developed more of this like ongoing relationship with artists, and you know, with the blockchain technology also, you know, being able to have that traceability always of like who's holding your piece and your pieces or your artworks and things like that, and how much, you know, being in this space has brought together artists and collectors and developing those friendships, I think has been like a truly fascinating and awesome part about this space.
And one thing I also really enjoy here is sometimes, you know, you don't need to really engage with the collector just when you have a drop. I mean, you could just, like, I pretty much have a, you know, just there are certain collectors, I know their birthdays. I know how many kids they have. I make sure that I reach out and I say something nice or, you know, wish them on Christmas or on their birthday. So, you know, going that extra mile sometimes, it doesn't need to be a transactional relationship. You know, these are people that have showed up for you. So, you know, I make it it's a privilege to be part of their collection, their wallet, their journeys. So, you know, when you show up for them, you know, it really matters. And it's not just they're not just a collector. They're not just a wallet. There's a human being behind it. And I just want to show my appreciation, just like, you know, I would to a friend or somebody else. So, you know, nurturing these relationships is very important. And, you know, not making it all transactional is also very important.
Yeah, it definitely seems that there's like openness and a willingness to share information, to just share your life with people here. Like, I remember when you first followed me back, I was like, wow, this is amazing. And then like developing these connections, like I'm looking at Jillian. I remember when Taylor followed me, I literally posted a video likening him following me back to like Cardi B getting a note from Bono. It was like that for me. I'm sure he remembers. I'm totally geeking out. But it's amazing that we are able to have such proximity to these people who we could learn so much from and who we admire so much. He's laughing because he probably remembers. I literally did post a video on my IG story like, Taylor followed me back. If you want to know what it feels like, just watch this video of Cardi B receiving a note from Bono and acting like a total fangirl, because that is exactly how it felt for me. But yeah, it's cool. And I mean, you know, the markets are going to go up and down, but I think the intrinsic value of the stuff that we've experienced here is like second to none. I've never experienced that anywhere else. I mean, even Giancarlo and I, like, we're like siblings, and mm-hmm. we're not related at all. People think we are, you know, that's just what this space brought, you know, together. I did have a question for you, Sheeta. As an established artist, what advice could you offer emerging artists like myself?
My God, you're not an emerging artist. You're an OG in my book. I mean, if anybody has made AI look, I don't even know how to say it. I think I just look at your work and I see so many different depths and layers and nuances in it. I'd love to get into a conversation with you over that one day. But I would say just take risks, just apply, take opportunities and be present. Because when you're present, then you tap into the opportunities. And I see you doing that. You know, you are present, and that's why you're able to take these opportunities. And I feel like a lot of people expect the opportunities to come their way because of who they are. but you need to extend yourself. You need to be present so that you are able to tap into the opportunities and things don't get handed to you. You have to really work for it. So, it doesn't matter if the steps are not really large, but again, you take one step at a time to get to where you want to be. And it doesn't happen overnight. And I'm sure, like a lot of people say that it took 10 years to become an overnight success, or it took, so many days to become an overnight success. But that is true. Things don't happen overnight for a lot of people. And it is a lot of failure, a lot of struggle. And sometimes you just need the right people by your side. I'll give you an example of Anna and Jillian here. Every single day, they show up for their friends every single day. No ask in return. Never asked anything in return. They just showed up out of love, out of friendship, out of, something, that they genuinely feel in their heart. And I see that. And it doesn't feel like they're doing it because they want something at the end of the day. They do it because they love it. And then when you see that kind of support, that's when you want to, show up for them as well over and over again. So take the risks, be present, because if you're not present, then you miss the opportunities. And like, Kobe said that you miss 100% of the shots that you don't take. So you have to take those risks and, try, because if you're not trying, you are not getting anywhere.
Oh, amazing advice. Thank you for that. I know that there's quite a lot of new artists in the space here in the listening audience. And I think that was a gem, a mic drop right there. Apart from your original paintings and digital artworks, what other ways can someone who appreciates your art purchase from you?
I do limited edition drops every now and then. I'm doing, in fact, all throughout this month of March. I'm trying to find ways of, in this economy that we are in the markets that we are in, how do I make art approachable? Art doesn't need to be exclusive. There can be certain pieces that are exclusive. Of course, exclusivity matters. But how do I make art inclusive while making it limited edition? How do I make it exclusive for people to want to own something? How do you own artists' works at different periods of their life? So I'm consciously thinking of bringing out collections throughout this month of March. Every Friday, I'm dropping one piece as an edition of five only. So I hand embellish, I draw on them. It's just a small limited edition number of just five. And again, I've tried to, each one is different. Each one is, every Friday I come out with that. And that's been really successful so far. Today I'm doing the third one in that drop. So I it's always priced at $100 Canadian plus shipping. So that's something that people have really started, enjoying. And I've got a lot of feedback saying that, it's a larger size. It's a 1620. So, it's nice to be able to own something at a more affordable price. So I do think of different ways of making art approachable. I also work with very high-end pieces, brands. So, there are different ways of owning art, and sometimes all people need to do is ask, because I feel like a lot of people get really intimidated. Should I reach out and ask a question? Should I ask this? Or maybe it's too prohibitively expensive. But you never know. Just ask. And sometimes, if nothing else, it sparks friendship, it sparks conversation. And that's how I've met amazing people. Even if people don't end up buying your art, the fact that they share, the fact that they comment, the fact that they show up for you every day really, really means a lot. The other day, I was having a conversation with somebody on Threads. I mean, I just responded to something they had written, and they were so inspired that they actually wrote a whole article based on that comment, that, this exchange that we had. And yesterday, he posted that on Threads, and it really took me back. And I'm like, when you show up consistently for people and comment with genuine interest, with intention, you never know, what that leads to. And the fact that he was able to write an entire article based on a thing that I just said to him on Threads was just blew my mind. This was remarkable. If that is not the power of community and social media, then what is? So, you know, I feel like there is support comes in so many different ways. What you're doing is supporting, what Giancarlo is doing is supporting, what Anna is doing is supporting. Everybody's supporting in their own ways, in their own capacity. And it is very much appreciated, whether it's a purchase at the end or whether it's friendship or whether it's, you know, a coffee that you meet up for. It matters, but, you know, you become the circle of an artist's, you know, the system that makes the artist and the art grow.
Wow, I love that. No, sorry, you were going to say something, Jenny?
Oh, yeah, no, just when you were saying that, I had this image of NFT NYC last year. We just happened to be on the exact same corner and we took a quick selfie and I was just like, oh, like, you know, like moments like that, you're not expecting it, but they're just so sweet. So that's what I thought of when you were telling us about the Threads story, like an unexpected positive moment. That was one, definitely a highlight for me at NFT NYC. The convention hadn't even started. I think we were just going to go pick up our badges. And
yes,
I left and I'm like, holy cow, it's so Curry. This is insane. It's great.
Not just that, I met Carlos. I met your family. I met your son and daughter. I remember we had a, you know, we all took pictures, we got to hang out. And it was just a serendipitous moment, unplanned, but, you know, just made me so happy. You know, just I came back and just this joy of, you know, having connected with you was insane.
Yeah, sometimes it's those unplanned moments that are the best, you know, it's because you weren't expecting anything. And then, yeah, like that, something like that happened. That's so cool. Hopefully we'll get to connect. Are you going to be there for NFT NYC again this year, Shita?
Yes, I will be there. I'm speaking this year, so hopefully I'm there from the 2nd till the 5th.
Oh, awesome. We will be there too. So
amazing. Looking forward to it.
I'll have to look for what do you know what day you're speaking? I'm going to put that also on the calendar, so definitely check that out.
I think I'm speaking on the 4th, but I will check and I'll get back to you.
Awesome. So one other thing I wanted to ask you was, and obviously you mentioned you're still doing these every Friday editions of Five Pieces, but maybe could you tell us about any other upcoming projects, collections, goals you have for your art career this year?
Oh my God, next week I'm dropping my very first piece on Rarychain. My first L2, I mean, I've never dropped an L2 before. I've always been an ETH Maxi, so I'm dropping my very first piece there as an open edition for 24 hours. I am very excited about that because I met the team there. And again, you know, connections, I didn't even know that they were there. And then they mentioned that the fact that they had seen me in the Proof community before. So it was very interesting to see, you know, that people still remember you, and it was interesting. So I'm very excited to be dropping my very first piece there on the 21st of March. So that's exciting. And I don't know if I'm allowed to say what I'm working on next, Giancarlo.
The one we're working on, no, I was planned it for today, but we can't reveal yet. So.
Okay, then we have something coming up.
Something coming,
yes. I'm also working on another one of my large murals that's going to be opening up in Copenhagen later this year, working with a couple of galleries. My physical pieces and traditional art continues, as well as my digital art. Working on a huge commission that's going to California, painting these days. So I'm very excited about that.
That's amazing. Congratulations. Super cool. All of the things that are happening. We wish you so much luck on all of the endeavors for 2024, but it's already sounding like an amazing year, that's for sure. So usually towards the end of the interview, we sort of pivot a little and do like some lighthearted questions if you'd entertain us.
100%.
Okay, cool. So I am big into curry dishes myself. And I was curious if you have a favorite curry dish.
Ah, I do have a favorite curry dish. It's coconut shrimp curry that my mom makes. So my mom is, my parents are from the eastern part of India. So, you know, Calcutta, where, you know, the eastern part. And I grew up in Delhi, which is the northern part. I'm married to a guy from Punjab. So, you know, I have the pan-Indian blood running in me. You know, my favorite curry has to be coconut shrimp curry from the eastern part of the world.
Yum. And I'm sure your mom makes it better than anybody on the planet. That's so cool. And then my next lighthearted question was, do you listen to music while you create? And if so, what type of music do you listen to?
I am absolutely listening to music all the time. I like something more mellow when I'm creating. I like, you know, movie soundtracks. If I have your old-fashioned movie soundtracks, I listen to Edith Piaf, the, you know, people from the 1920s and 30s, French music. I live in French Canada, so French music is all around. And it's very, very soothing and romantic. Love Louis Armstrong, like jazz a lot. Love, you know, Taylor Swift. This is my daughter is a Swiftie. So there's not too many days that goes by where we are not listening to Taylor Swift or Ed Sheeran and jamming out.
Love both of those.
That's great.
That's awesome. And you mentioned movie soundtracks. Actually, the next thing I was going to ask you and we usually ask people is, what are your like top three favorite movies of all time?
Top three favorite movie. A Beautiful Life, for sure.
Oh, great one.
Beautiful Life. I just such a powerful movie of, you know, keep going, of about the power of positivity.
And hope.
And hope, exactly. That's my all-time favorite. Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, if you've seen that. I love that movie.
That's a great Jim Carrey movie.
You know? Yes, that Jim Carrey movie just blew me away that, you know, that there's different nuances of how you see it. And what else? So many, but I like romantic comedies and movies that make me think. I'm not a big sci-fi movie buff or, you know, action movies. Stepmom. I don't know if I'm... That's just such a corny movie. Stepmom.
I cried my eyes out. What a movie with Me Julia too. Roberts, right?
Yes. Susan Sarandon and Julia Roberts. I have that. And I mean, I can watch it over and over again. And it still makes me feel... That was another powerful movie. Stepmom, I'll never ever forget.
and for ones that make you think, what's like one of a top one there in that category?
A Beautiful Mind.
A Beautiful Mind, yeah. That's a good one.
That's lovely. The recent one, what is it called? The one with Benedict. The one where he was the computer program. I'm forgetting the name. Yeah, that one. you know what I'm talking about.
I know, and now I'm drawing a blank on the name.
And I watched something on Netflix the other day. It's called Mouthful of Air. And that was amazing too. Really. And the new one, Past Lives. This Korean couple, this Korean girl who meets her ex after many, many years. I watched it on the plane and it was so powerful. It was beautifully done. It was excellent. It's called Past Lives. Questions a lot of things, you know, not just relationships, but questions, friendships, questions, culture, you know, questions, immigrant life. So it was really beautifully done.
Awesome. No, some great, great, great movie choices there for sure. I was going to mention if other folks want to maybe come up and join us on stage, you can feel free to request now. And then I was going to ask one question before I then turn it over to our lovely friend Anna, who's up here. But so I'm actually going to be traveling to India next month to Bangalore for my day job. And I was curious if you had any advice or recommendations or things that I should keep in mind for my trip.
Oh, my God. Bangalore is amazing. Bangalore is so multicultural. I mean, you could be in Singapore or New York or Chicago, you know, it's like Bangalore. But the food, you must try vegetarian Indian food. You must try the dosas, which is a savory pancake, which is, you know, it's a very crispy, savory pancake that has potato stuffing inside. It's It's absolutely divine. Yeah, I mean, I could definitely send you some recommendations. I have a couple of friends there. If you ever need anything, I could give you contact. But Bangalore is a lovely place. You'll really, really like it. The weather is wonderful. It's one of the best places in India. It's the tech capital also. So it's a wonderful place. You'll really like it.
Yeah, and I'm super excited for the food because I do love, I mean, I love like all types of cuisine and I'm open to like experiment and try stuff, you know, try crazy stuff, you know, so I love Indian food. So I'm really, really excited for the food. But yeah, if you have like friends, people I could connect with there, man, I would, yeah, greatly appreciate that. Definitely would welcome it and would love to be able to connect with some locals as well. So definitely appreciate that. Oh, no, I think we lost Anna. I just thought she was good.
Oh, man, she might be back. She's traveling, actually, to Bradenton, to my side of the peninsula. And we're supposed to meet up at the beach tomorrow. So it's probably the car connectivity giving her a hard time.
Oh, really? Okay, well, that's nice. You guys are meeting up. That's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yep, family's meeting up again. Her kids are coming. My kids are, I'm going to put everybody in the truck and just head to the beach tomorrow.
Oh, that sounds like so much fun.
It's beach season for you guys. It's still snowing here.
Yes, it's spring break here. And it's already, to me, this is summer because I'm from New York. But yeah, it's hot already over here.
Oh my gosh, it's still snowing. And we are expecting another storm to pass by this weekend. So yeah, we really don't have spring here. We just go from winter to hot weather overnight in Canada.
Yeah, you guys get so much cold up there. That's like a whole other level for sure. Oh, it's too bad we lost Anna.
So tell me, what's the plan at NFT NYC? What are you excited about? What are you going to do? Jennifer speaking. Are you speaking as well, Giancarlo?
You know, I had so much stuff going on, and then I missed the deadline to like submit for the application. Jenny's usually like on top of everything. You know, it's funny when you were talking about like, you know, advice and taking risks and being there, man. Jenny is like always applying to the open call. She's like reminding people, like, make sure you submit for this or for that, you know. And I missed that one. I did submit the artwork. The artwork will be displayed there, which is really cool. So I'm very excited and happy for that. And really, yeah, I'm looking forward to like supporting, you know, other people, right? Like people I've connected with in the space that are going to be speaking. So definitely going to be there to support Jenny. I'm going to pencil in yours as soon as you send me the date and time, but would love to come and hear you speak. I know Carlos and some of our other friends, Hudasaka, Yusapata, are going to be there presenting as well. So yeah, really trying to just support people. We also have like a One Love DAO event on the Monday. So with you know, a lot of artists, over 100, right, Jenny? Like that are going to be exhibiting art, you know, so yeah. That's super exciting.
Yeah, so the first we're having that event. And actually, hermano, if you would like to speak at that event, we do have a speaker panel. We could figure something out.
Okay.
Yeah, there you go. Now you're speaking during NFT NYC.
Let's go. Okay. Right. Yes.
Cool. And then, yes, it's 100 plus artworks from international artists who are all DAO members that we will be exhibiting at that Canvas 3.0 gallery at the Oculus World Trade Center. And we've got a DJ coming, food, and a bar. So it should be a good time. And then I actually had a conversation with the founders of NFT NYC. And, you know, they've been, I guess, watching, you know, what we've been doing and offered us a community zone inside of the convention center. So that's April 3rd from 2 to 4 p.m. So it's just a little gathering area with some couches and a monitor. We'll be just gathering there that day. And then same, other than that, I'll just be supporting everybody else. I'll definitely come and listen to you speak, Ishita. And yeah, that's pretty much the vibe, the plan going into it.
That sounds amazing. I mean, I know that your One Love DAO event is on the 1st. I came to know if it's too late. I'm flying in on the 2nd, so I would just have missed it. I know that Janine reached out, and I'm like, oh, I'm going to miss it so bad. I had just booked my tickets. I'm like, I wish I knew the day before. Booked a day in advance. So, yeah, I'm so sorry I'm going to miss it. But I'll definitely be there at your community event on the 3rd. I'm really looking forward to it.
Awesome. Can't wait for it.
Yeah, looking forward to that. And what else do you have planned for NFT NYC? Any other key things you're hoping to do and attend?
Definitely going to be hanging out more at the conference this year. Last year there were too many events happening with the place, but this time I'm looking forward to hearing everyone speak. I'm also going to hear our friend Aaron Haber. I mean, we were again met through Clubhouse. He's part of the Laughing Ape Club, and he's doing a comedy stand-up, sponsored by ApeCoin. So I'm really looking forward to going and meeting him after 3 years. Connected so many times through Clubhouse, and we've been friends over the years, but we've never really met in person. So that's something there. And, just generally hang out with my friends and at least, learn a lot more at the conference this year. I'm not sure, Taylor, I hope you're coming there this year. I met Taylor 2 years ago at the conference for the very first time. This time I really want to be more chill. Less parties. Last time was, too many things going on. But this time I want to be more at the conference for sure.
Yeah, I can relate to the too much partying. I remember, what was it for like the VCon events? I've usually just like, it's been like not nonstop and going to like 2-3 o'clock in the morning. And
you can hang, fam.
Yeah. For sure. But no, that's great. So glad to hear you're going to be there and, at the meetings. And I think that's one thing that I also really look forward to as well, is also just being able to like connect with people, because there's just a lot of people I interact with, engage with, on X and, regularly like talk to, but some of them I've not met in person yet. So I'm also really looking forward to actually connecting in real life and, just having a conversation, maybe over some coffee or drinks or whatever, or while looking at art, I'm also really, really looking forward to that as well.
I kind of like having this, this idea of having a community space at the event, because I think otherwise you don't really end up having a conversation. At least 2 hours gives you enough time to, connect with people, have a conversation without there being too much music or too much weed around. having this conversation, this time is very important. And, we've been connecting over X for so many years, but this personal connection really makes a difference, really reinforce things, underline these connections more by in person for sure.
Yeah, 100%. That part is so key, because it's like, sometimes you'll go to an event or something, and then you try to have a conversation with somebody, and it's so loud, and you're like trying to speak over this, and then your voice is shot, you can barely hear them. So I like this idea. And then, like you said, like having a couple hours, you can get a good chance to like, okay, you have a good conversation with a group of people, and you can move over and talk to somebody else. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to that. I think it's a great idea.
Giancarlo, I also wanted to say something that, you've been such a huge motivation in showing up for health every single day. I have to tell you this, that your posts on, how you worked out and what you've been doing, and the fact that you consistently do that really motivates me to show up for myself, even on the days that I just don't feel like going to the gym and, doing anything. Just the fact that I have to get up and show up, and that's the biggest discipline that I can do for myself. Really, I wanted to say that I'm watching, it matters, and you're motivating me for sure.
That makes me so happy to hear that. And it's funny, because I have heard that from like several other people, and I actually have a list of people that I know, like, especially if I know that I'm helping to like motivate them, or if they're trying to achieve some kind of like fitness goal or stay consistent with something. So I keep like a list of people, and I'll occasionally reach out and be like, hey, how's the marathon training going? All right. Or you said you were going to start hitting the gym. Like, how's it going? That makes me so happy. And that's part of like why I love to share that too, because it is another kind of passion of mine, aside from from art and the other stuff in the space, but it's so important that we all like prioritize our health and exercise, you know. So I like to share that, and it makes me like so happy to hear that that's actually inspiring and motivating you, because there's definitely days when it's hard, you know, when you just like don't feel like it or you're tired, you know. But the key is really being able to stay consistent, right, and sticking to that. So that makes me really happy. I'm so glad.
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the things that I do now is if I'm on a Twitter space in the morning, I make sure that I'm working out while listening to it. So there is no excuse that you show up. If you're showing up, you know, for your, you know, whatever, networking, career, learning, education, you're also showing up for yourself and moving your body while doing it. So, you know, in the morning spaces that I listen to, I'm always on my elliptical listening and working out at the same time.
Let's go. That's awesome. See, that's a great way to do it. You know, you multitask, right? So you can get those exercise in. You know, I think people just, a lot of times we just think about like reasons we can't, and instead of focusing on like solutions, like how can I fit this into my day? And sometimes it could even be like, you know, even doing like 5 minutes of exercise is better than nothing. You know, go for a walk while you're on a call, or, you know, or while you're doing something else. Like, there's just so many ways that we can incorporate fitness into our life. But I feel like many times people just, you know, just think of excuses instead of like, all right, what little habit, what little thing can I do differently to just be a little bit more, you know, a little bit healthier, a little bit, you know, incorporating more exercise into their day. So no, I love that. I love that you're joining the spaces of all on the elliptical. That's awesome. All right. So we didn't get any other requests for speakers. So too bad Anna, you know, dropped off, but we wish her well. I wanted to once again thank everybody that is in the room that joined us today on the space, and, you know, that we're here. And also just, you know, big thank you to you, Sheeta, for being our guest artist today on the space. It's been absolutely wonderful getting to learn more about your story, about your artworks, the stuff you have coming up. I'm really looking forward to, being able to share the project, the thing we're working on soon, and also to maybe be able to connect in real life in New York as well. So thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you, Sheeta.
Thank you. I wanted to shout out John, who's here. He's a, you know, huge supporter of, you know, women artists in this space, been a huge collector, always shows up. You know, there's not a single tweet that he misses. So big shout out to John here. You know, always, I just see you and I want to celebrate you, because, you know, when you are there supporting everybody else, it matters. It makes us feel validated, makes us feel supported. Makes us want to keep going. So you're a huge factor in so many of our, you know, circles. So just appreciate you. And I hope you know that. Thank you, Giancarlo and Jennifer. Really, this has been an honor and a privilege to be part of this 67th episode. I was going to say 69th, but 67th episode. What you're doing really matters. And, you know, just uplifting people and, you know, being part of the community, the DAO that you started. I need to speak to you about how I can be part of it as well. So
we would be so honored. Oh my goodness. Yes, I'll DM you the info. It's really super simple.
Perfect.
Oh, and we did get a speaker, by the way. So just as we were wrapping up, and I'm probably gonna mispronounce this, but Subrajit, is that your name?
Hi, Giancarlo. Yes, you pronounced it correctly. It's Subrajit. Hi, Jennifer. And I just jumped quickly to say hi to Ishikadi. I am a big fan of your work and been witnessing your journey since I joined back in Wazirex days in 2022. So yes, big fan, and really enjoyed today's conversation. And recently connected with Giancarlo, so we'll be looking forward to more such sessions. And want to just say, like, speak once with Ishitari.
Oh my God, thank you so much. I just was reading a comment about Chingri Malai curry, which is my favorite curry. And my parents are from Calcutta. And that is my absolute top favorite curry. So you just made it today. So I'm totally jealous. I wish I was eating that. And thank you so much. It was so nice to hear from you today. And yeah, let's take a look at it. I'm following you now. So, wow, beautiful.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Yes, so I am a photographer from Durgapur, like a village near Durgapur. So I have been traveling around India lately to attend all the NFT events and recently staying in Bangalore. So yes, we'll definitely love to connect more on that as well. So yes, thank you.
Yes, man. I'll DM you if you still happen to be there when I go. Like, yeah, it would be awesome to connect. So cool. Well, thank you so much. Thank you so much for coming up to speak. Always appreciate it.
I love the small world.
Right. Like how serendipitous.
Yes. Isn't this amazing?
It is awesome. I love it. All right, guys. Well, again, thanks to everyone that was here today. Thanks again, Ishita, for being here. And I want to wish everybody a fantastic Friday and a wonderful weekend. Take care, everyone.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye. Bye.